Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force. Your notes, you don't need, you know all this. You've got this all in your head, right?
I want to make sure I'm accurate, Mike, because I'm going to start by correcting you on something. I was listening on the way in. You mentioned about the BP plant being 3.5 million or something. It's billion with a B.
With a B.
Yes, they had a with huge...
I thought the M sounded small.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? As I was saying it, I was thinking, am I right? Because I was speaking off the top of my head there, right. And I knew it was 3.8. But you're right, it's billion with a B.
Billion at the Whiting Refinery.
All right, all right, let's start there. Let's start there. It's a billion with a B, so it can do what?
Well, that those billions were able to, the Whiting BP plant was able to expand to accommodate all the tar sands that are coming down from Alberta, Canada, and it is now the largest processor or refiner of tar sands in the country and the second largest in the world.
Second in the world. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. It's humongous.
Right.
And that's part of the problem. With this investment, BP is not going to back off on this. I mean, this is $3.8 billion they put into this.
Right.
It's there. Welcome to the 21st century. Welcome to the new world of tar sands oil in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least in Whiting. But if it's in Whiting, it's in Chicago and it's in Lake Michigan, as
it
we
is.
Know.
It is.
It just it and it's interesting because just last year there was a $400 million with an M settlement with the Whiting facility over air pollution standards.
Right, right.
But it was just the air. It didn't take into account water.
Yeah. And, you know,
there's some various environmental groups and the EPA got involved in all that. And then there was a settlement and they would fix certain things about their air emissions.
Sure. And when you invest that kind of money, or when they do, I should say, they're able to pretty much write their own regulations with the state of Indiana, the Department of Environmental Management, on the wastewater that's sent back into Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And if it weren't for an outcry by the citizens of Chicago and the Chicago Tribune jumping on it, they probably would have gotten away with dumping a whole lot more mercury, arsenic, and other dangerous toxic chemicals.
But
and
if you look at places like, and if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, I've got a lot of the history of this up there. And one of them is from the Ring of Fire website, which is heard on Chicago's Progressive Talk. And they claim that, you know, mercury is still being leaked into the lake.
Oh, it is. It's being dumped into the lake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Let's call a spade a spade here, all right?
Right?
But so with that as the background, tell me what happened. How is it that you discover, and it sounds like a discovery. It's like, oh, look, we turned a corner in the river, and oh, look, there are piles of pet coke. How did this happen?
Yeah, well, it's a little more visible than that. We crisscrossed the Calumet River out our way several times. Sometimes in a day, you might go across it three, four different points, different times a day. There's bridges at 92nd, 95th, 100th Street, 106th and 130th Street in the city. And going across the bridge at 106th Street, we always observe the different plants that are there that for the longest period had coal piles on them, because coal is used in the steel industry. And, of course, we knew all that, and it's used to make the steel.
Well, let's start there, too. Mm-hmm. What were the dangers, if any, of having coal piled up there?
Well, the people that live in the immediate vicinity always had coal dust blowing in and out of their homes. Plus the fact that, you know, burning it is high carbon and it's
And of course, that it was being burned by the State Line plant and by the Crawford and Fisk, all of which have been shut down.
Right, right. And State Line's just maybe about a mile and a half from what we're talking about on the Calumet River here.
Right.
So we got rid of one black product, black material, and got another one, a new one. And it just started after these coal piles were beginning to disappear. Another new product was beginning to appear in a larger and larger quantity. And it wasn't until we happened to be at a point that you don't normally see. You can't see it from the neighborhoods. We were doing a tour, and we happened upon the Koch brothers, where they have bought. And we didn't talk about the Koch brothers yet, but
no, we haven't.
KCBX, I should say.
Okay, which is a Koch brothers company.
Right, right. And
it sounds like a radio station, KCBX.
Yeah.
Welcome to KCBX, broadcasting from the banks of the Calumet River.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll throw a little humor in. Also,
if we don't, we're gonna cry if we don't.
I know, and then Koch brothers handling Coke, you know,
and some people call this petroleum Coke, which is petroleum C-O-K-E. Right. Some people call it petroleum Coke K-O-C-H, as in Koch brothers.
Right, right. So we probably should tell just a little bit about what this pet Coke is, because it's a residual from the refining of the tar sands over at the BP plant. And it's one of the waste products that come out, and it comes out in black pellets and dust, similar to coal. If you see piles of each side by side, which they are at the KCBX site, you can hardly tell the difference.
I would think that, because you look – I've seen the photos, and I've got photos on my website. And if you go to a lot of the links on my website, you will see photos of the pet coke. It looks like big pile of coal.
Right, right.
You really can't tell the difference.
Exactly.
Cannot, rather, is what I meant to say.
Right. But we happen to take a turn in the river and see where they have recently purchased, mm-hmm. As of December, they purchased DTE terminals, and where they had been storing coal traditionally. And this is on the former steel mill site. Used to be Republic Steel, which then became LTV Steel. And then went bankrupt in the 80s and closed up when most of the other steel was fleeing mm-hmm. southeast Chicago and leaving. So it became a bulk material handling terminal. And when we saw what was going on there and more of this product being brought in by barge, by truck, by rail, we were quite alarmed at the magnitude of it.
And because you turned a corner and you saw piles of coke that were, what, several stories tall, right?
Several stories tall and about half mile square. And mm-hmm. and now that we've gotten aerial photos, Google Earth and whatnot, we're able to see this big black blotch there in that where the steel mill once was, and it's growing. And more and more is being brought in, and it hasn't even begun yet. Because
I know, because they haven't fully expanded the operation yet.
At the refinery.
All right, so the question I have to ask you is, why is BP taking the pet coke from Indiana and not just moving it to Illinois, which they are, but moving it into the city of Chicago in
right.
Illinois?
Yeah, that does sound strange. Well,
it does. It's like this is the only place in the world you have to put this stuff, and you know, as you were saying, it blows more readily than even the coal did.
Right, right. It is finer. There's the particulate matter comes off a lot easier on windy days.
Well, and I think that's
coal.
An important part to say. It's just sitting out there unprotected. There are no regulations. There are no requirements.
Well, they that was just, going to be my next question. Okay. What is it about? Why is it not being stored in Indiana?
Yeah, back to that one first. Indiana actually has more strict rules on regulating the stuff on the site in Indiana.
You just said
right.
Indiana has stricter rules. You know what my response to that is?
Well, because Indiana doesn't typically have many
environmental rules. Right.
Right, right.
Indiana has stricter rules than the city of Chicago. Let me do that again. Okay.
On this particular
shameful.
Issue, they require a 40-foot wall around being stored. So
in Indiana.
Right, right. But Chicago has no law like that. And, you know, we went out on the river. We went right side by side from where the stuff was being loaded and unloaded. And you can see it being dropped into the river. There's film along the river. We have photographs.
Well, there's going to be a lot of that stuff that just slips off the barge when they're
right.
you know, and it blows
right.
or you miss. You know, anybody's ever dug and has tried to take a shovel full of dirt and put it in an area, goes, so, oops, I missed. It's on
right.
the sidewalk. I'll have to sweep that off. Except in this case, it's in the Calumet River.
It's in the river, which is just about a mile away. It's connected to Lake Michigan. So once again, we have.
So it's going right into the lake.
It either goes into the lake or it goes downstream, depending on conditions. So, mm-hmm. But it is all connected, yes. And also it blows into the river. And every time that there's a loader, either dumps a load into a truck or offloads, there's a puff of this stuff that goes mm-hmm. up each time. And then if there's any wind at all, even on a slightly windy day, it carries it away. And you can just see it going through, and you've seen the photographs.
Well, not only the photographs, but if you go to my website again, mikenovak.net, go to this week's show. And believe me, this is, thank goodness, the Chicago media are on this. You know, often they miss these stories, but Chicago Tonight covered it. The Tribune has covered it. NRDC went out with you on the boat and did a video, and you can find that link on my website as well. You can go to Southeast Environmental Task Force and find a lot of these links. And I've got all those. It's all linked on my website if you want to see some of this. So it's actually being documented, and at a point before it becomes a horrific problem. Now, there might not be anything we can do to stop it, but that's why we're discussing this, right?
Right. We are working on it. And we had an exciting community meeting this past Thursday. And I want to give a lot of credit to the neighbors around there, because they haven't been silent on this issue. They've been calling us and calling the EPA, and have prompted the Illinois Attorney General to open an investigation about this. The Illinois EPA is on it. The U.S. EPA is on it now as well. Mm-hmm. And at this community meeting, we expected to just inform some of the people around there how to make calls and complaints and how to document and take pictures, especially on windy days. They came out in force, and we had a small room that accommodated about 40, 50 people, and we had over 100 people that crammed inside and about two dozen outside that couldn't even get in. And they were very vociferous about this problem, and our aldermen.
The people,
yes.
Because you mentioned the Illinois EPA and the Attorney General's office, and forgive me for being a cynic, but their track record is not a good one in terms of environment in Illinois. I can say that because I'm the radio guy. And my observations tell me that you'll be lucky if something is done in either. Oh, look, and then the emergency phone just started. I believe it's Lisa Madigan on the hotline here calling, right? It's very, very funny. The phone started flashing in front
what
of me.
What is that? I thought it was Batman.
It's the bat line here. Lisa Madigan wants in on the conversation, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the point being that all these people showed up.
Right.
And that's my second point, which is, when does it stop on the southeast side? When do you guys catch a break?
Well, exactly. And I want to take my own pokes at the Illinois EPA, too, because they were telling us, well, we're not getting a lot of complaints. And we said, aren't you hearing us? And they said, well, they're not, you know, people aren't calling in. People aren't registering complaints. And so we had to do this. We had to, and talking to the city said, well, we don't have a lot of 311 calls. And they expected if there was a problem out there, people would be calling. So we started doing that ourselves. And
I'm going to tell folks right now listening to this program, mm-hmm. if you have had an issue with this and with the tar sands, the petcoke blowing into your house and coating your surfaces and getting in your eyes and getting in your mouth, call 311 right now.
Exactly.
And do it all day long, and do it all day long tomorrow. And we'll let the city know, we'll let the EPA know that there are phone calls being made. You need to document it. That's one of the things that's important. Is, you know, even with crime and other things going on, you got to call.
Exactly.
You got to call 911 if it's a crime. And if you got an environmental issue like this, you got to call 311 and get it on the record.
Right. So I want to give credit as well to the Clean Power Coalition members who we're all together working to close down the coal-fired power plants, and I've been talking.
You thought they were done with this? I mean, and now they have a new mission.
Well, yeah, and we knew that there would be other things coming up, but I've talked to them about the petcoke issue for the past couple of years working in that coalition, and we did kind of relax for a while, but we hung in there and were able to gather up some of our better partners, and I want to give credit particularly to the Natural Resources Defense Council, Illinois Environmental Council, Sierra Club, Environmental Law and Policy Center, and others that have been working with us to correct this problem, and the Respiratory Health Association of Chicago, who provided us with a lot of information from Detroit, from your native city.
You know, and that's a good segue here to our other guests. Let me bring them in right now. And one of them is Chris Womoff, and he's with the Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands. Chris, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Great. I'm glad you could be on the phone with us. And you're in Kalamazoo, right?
Yes, sir. Yep, Kalamazoo, Michigan.
I've been through there many times. As you heard Tom say, I am a native of Michigan, mostly Detroit area. But you know, when you grow up in Michigan, you stop in all the big cities. I've been to Kalamazoo. My folks lived in Battle Creek for a while. I mean, it's all that area. I know all about it. Let's also bring in Stephen Boyle. If I can get this phone to work, there we go. Stephen, are you with me?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Okay, and Stephen is with the Detroit Coalition Against Tar Sands, and that's known as DCATS. And then, of course, the Chris is with the Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands, known as MICATS, MICATS. And I have the links to their organizations on my page, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. It's all there. Stephen, I want to start with you because we're talking about you fought this in Detroit.
And I've actually went over and saw Chris, and we were just in Battle Creek with as I was on my way out of Michigan, sad to say, but there is a huge problem. With the problem here, it's got to do with the EPA not regulating petroleum coke at all, really. They sit there and they've got carbon coke, which is from coal, regulated as a hazardous waste. However, when it comes to petroleum coke, which contains even more heavy metals, they don't have it listed. They rely on state implementation plans, which is one reason why Illinois is being sought out instead of Indiana, because the state implementation plans are more lax in Illinois than they are in Indiana.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's again. I'm stunned by that. Especially, you know, it seems to me, and maybe you've investigated this, Tom. That is there something that the city of Chicago could do? Is there an ordinance that could be passed?
Well, absolutely. They could do what they did up in Michigan, and the state legislature up in Michigan did propose legislation, and the mayor of Detroit took a very active role and ordered the. Same owners up there. The Koch brothers owned
different company, but the owned by the Koch brothers again.
Absolutely,
In Detroit, where this was piled, different refining company. It was Marathon Oil in Detroit.
Yes,
am I right about that, Stephen?
Well, it's a little bit of a misnomer here. The mayor honestly did not step up to the plate until the public guilted him into doing so.
That doesn't surprise me a bit. No. Mm-hmm.
We also have a problem with the, so to speak, deposed mayor in Detroit, because we have an emergency manager who's calling the shots on many things.
Well, yeah, that has to really complicate things, Stephen. I mean, you don't even have democracy in Detroit right now.
No, we don't. And when it comes to the spokesperson for Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, he's married to the governor's spokesperson. We're literally hearing the governor speaking through our environmental quality people.
And yet, Stephen, let me interrupt here, but you were still able to get those piles removed from the banks of the Detroit River, right?
Yes. We actually held a blockade of the trucks on the first Monday of summer, which is the same day that Chris Womoff ventured into the pipeline in Kalamazoo. We blockaded the trucks. They stopped delivering pet coke for the day. We went to the city council the next morning, and we actually came out at 6 in the morning before the trucks started on Tuesday, and there were no trucks until after we came out of the city council meeting. And when we were at the city council meeting, we said, you know, it's really sad that the public and residents come out and we enforce the law because there should be no dumping on that site. They had no permit for dumping. And actually, when we came to the special land use hearing, 70 people from the city came out opposed. One person from outside the city came out to support. And in those opposing included the landowner, who said they didn't realize that these were going on there without permit, and they wished to have it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
We also had the Riverwalk expansion plans being revealed, where they were talking about bringing it down 5.5 miles from downtown, which would span right across the dock that now has what would be a petroleum spill, because you've got the tech boat when it sits there. Granted, they put an asphalt pad down, but the problem is outside the asphalt pad, rain will take the water away. And they're supposed to make these pads concave so that the water stays cooled on them. And then you see the flocks of seagulls going to the open water, and you're wondering what's happening with the seagulls as they go away.
What do you mean by the seagulls?
Well, they're being poisoned.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought maybe you thought. Yeah. Well, of course. And you know what? It's interesting. I'm surprised there wasn't an international incident that.
International water.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff was blowing into Windsor, Ontario, across the river. I'm surprised that the government, of course, the government of Canada is the one producing the tar sands in the first place. So
that was an ironic twist.
Yeah,
because they were in an uproar there across the river in Windsor, the council up there. And maybe Stephen can talk about that a little bit, because the news accounts that we saw, the people were shouting in the council over there, what's going on with this stuff blown over? And it's so ironic that it came down from Canada and then it was blown back.
Yeah.
And we got members from Parliament in Ontario that stood up and demanded the government.
Okay, well, so here's the question becomes: we know that those piles of petcoke were removed from Detroit, and Tom raised this issue. We talked yesterday, and I was fascinated by the idea. Nobody seems to know where those piles of petcoke ended up. They know they were removed from Detroit, from the banks of the Detroit River, and some people speculate they went to Ohio. We talked about it earlier in the program. You know, let's find another depressed city like Toledo, and we'll take our piles there. Or, you know, I'm thinking, why not take it to Cleveland? Why not? Whatever. Why not just dump it into Lake Erie? You know, that the lake's trashed anyway. Nobody really seems to know where it went. There's an article I linked to on my website. USA Today is speculating. You know, they say it might have gone to Ohio. But Tom, you said you asked the companies where the coke was coming from that's piling up on the Calumet, and they wouldn't be direct with you.
Right. They offer very little information. And from what our legislators tell us, they said that they had the same reaction, too, that they haven't told them very much. But we seem to think that our public officials, at the very least, should be able to know what's coming in, what's going out, what's being stored. These people are permitted, and we should know what's on that property.
So it makes me wonder if we didn't get some of Detroit's petcoke on the banks of the Calumet.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if we did.
I would say it's definitely a possibility. However, in the mining process, how much petcoke are they producing a day at BP Whiting? It's a tremendous amount.
Well, and more to come.
Right.
Because they haven't really ramped up the operations yet.
Right.
What the figures we looked at show that they're currently doing about 700,000 tons a year, and they're scheduled to go over 2 million tons once this coker is completed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Banks of the Detroit River still do have petroleum coke on them. It's not reported, the biggest problem.
So there's been no remediation. They've taken the piles.
Well, there's a pile in E-course that's not even receiving the treatment that the pile closer to downtown Detroit was receiving. They were putting an epoxy polymer on it to keep it from blowing in the wind. Well, the piles in E-course don't have any epoxy polymer applied. And the water comes down. It runs off the water. There is no asphalt pad. The pile showed up when we did our blockade of the trucks. They were looking for where are they going to take it now because they weren't going to stop producing it. So then they started dumping it. They have no pad under it. There's no site preparation. And the water runs off it and goes right out into the Detroit River. It's land violation, water violation, air violation, and it will impact Detroit, all of its communities that pull drinking water out of the Detroit River.
Mm-hmm. And this is a really important point, Stephen, even in Chicago, what are they doing? They're wetting down, apparently, the piles of pet coke, which is probably not very effective. They claim that it reduces the dust, and I'm sure it does reduce the dust to some degree. How are you supposed to treat those piles, Stephen?
Well, here's one thing. Take a look in the EPA regulations. There's a petroleum exception that they continue to put in front of people. That petroleum exception, inside it, says that there is no land storage permissible and that the exception only exists in the condition that it's inside the refinery's gasification process. So we have the condition blown out, so there is no exception. And when it fails that condition, you're supposed to reclassify the product. The problem is reclassifying the product in the EPA regulations for petroleum coke don't exist as far as a hazardous waste. So then it falls on the state implementation plan, and our departments in the state look at it as a marketable commodity as opposed to it being hazardous waste. But we have to realize people sell hazardous waste as commodities, as products.
That is, by the way, that's Stephen Boyle with the Detroit Coalition Against Tar Sands. Chris Wamoff is also on the line. I'm sorry I haven't gotten to you, but you're next, Chris, with the Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands. I have in the studio Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force. We are talking about kind of a distressing situation about the south side of Chicago and piles of pet coke. Chris, let's go to you because you have been dealing with this in Kalamazoo for 3 years following the Enbridge spill. Lisa and I have talked about that in the last couple of weeks. We were pretty amazed to read that there were 16 alarms in the Enbridge equipment that were ignored before they discovered the spill, and apparently it's the engineers thought there were air bubbles in there. It makes you wonder how often that happens. What's the aftermath 3 years down the road?
Hey, thanks for having me on. The aftermath is quite symbolic of the deals that they've been having in Detroit, what you guys are seeing happening in Chicago. You kind of spoke about the frequency of these spills. It's important to understand this company, Enbridge, averages one spill a week. Literally averages one spill a week. Their track record is horrendous, and their ability to be held liable, as Stephen pointed out about our government, has been depressingly laughable.
Although you're laughing, yeah, it is laughable and it is depressing. But you know, we're talking about the same kind of product, which is tar sands oil that was going through that pipeline. What pipeline 6B, right?
Yes. Yeah. And this is, I mean, the product tar sands, I know it gets really scientific when you have these conversations, but with the refining and the processing of this pet coke, you got to realize that tar sands, if you take refined tar sands and you put that into a Honda Civic, it would have the same carbon emission as a Chevy Suburban. Like, this is this whole thing is a financial issue much more than really an energy issue. And it's...
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you, Chris. All right. You live in Kalamazoo. You told me, and we've talked before, that you can actually walk down to the river and pick up tar balls right now, and this is 3 years after the fact.
Yeah, yeah. In March, the EPA estimated that there's still at least 180,000 gallons of bitumen tar sand oil in the bottom of this river. And these tar balls that we were talking about, this is a glowing example of how this response has been. On September 30th, the Michigan Department of Community Health released a report saying that the river was safe for recreational use, that people could go swimming in the river. And also them, as well as our Michigan Department of Environmental Quality and the EPA here in Michigan, have said that there weren't use of chemical dispersants. Well, you can go to the Kalamazoo River and literally just go fishing for a couple moments, and you'll find these things that we call tar balls. These tar balls are accumulations of the very chemical dispersants that they say were not used in the spill. And there are literally thousands of them all over the river. I don't think you could walk across the river without stepping on one. And even though these are all over the river and they have all these incredible PAHs and NHX and benzene, all of these cancer-causing agents and chemicals that they use, they still released this report saying that the river was safe. And then literally a couple of days ago, we had one of our other people that work in the community find a report issued on the very same day, September 30th, saying not to go into the river because they were spraying chemical dispersants all along the route of the river. But it's amazing how lenient our government has been on them with this cleanup.
Yeah. Do you know what the financial repercussions were for Enbridge? What were they forced to pay?
They say that there's been a lot of cost to the cleanup, but as far as them paying fines and as far as accountable costs that we charged Enbridge because of the spill, the figure is at around $3.8 million. But you got to understand, $3.8 million is charged to a company that makes between $40 and $50 million a day on this process.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, where does the Kalamazoo River empty into?
Lake Michigan.
So it goes straight into Lake Michigan. So,
yeah.
So okay. Everything. All roads lead to Lake Michigan. It seems at this point. Whether it's the Calumet or Kalamazoo River and all this stuff that gets spilled in there. Oh my goodness. Are there still people displaced from Kalamazoo spill? Correct, Chris?
Oh yeah, yeah. Over 150 families were displaced from the spill, and this is Battle Creek, like you said, you're from the area. You know, Michigan was thriving on car industry, so when those went down, this already became like an area where we're having a lot of homeless issues and further displacement. It's wild because all these people are displaced.
Yeah, and they're not as far as I've been able to determine from what I've read, they're not going to be able to go back.
Oh no, they're a lot of the people when they initially got sick from this, you can't really even be. You got to get away. A lot of them, if they can afford it, they've just kind of left the area, and if they can't, they're just
They're up the Kalamazoo without a paddle, basically.
Yeah.
Well, and that's really no different than, you know, last week in Mayflower, Arkansas, they tore a lot of those homes down from that spill.
And the only reason they're not going to tear homes down in North Dakota where that spill was is because it's cornfield. And these, you know, if there's a pipeline, it's going to spill. And they're talking, one of the articles I read yesterday is we got one of those pipelines that goes under the Straits of Mackinac. Okay, where Lake Huron and Lake Michigan come together, if that thing goes and they're going to, you know, start pushing this heavy tar sands oil through these pipelines that some of which are, you know, 50, 60 years old, We're gonna blow up the Great Lakes.
Well, and the challenge with cleaning tar sands is that it's a much heavier oil. So unlike what you saw in the Gulf, where it kind of floats somewhat and can be remediated to a degree, certainly not as it should be. It certainly leaves long-standing damage behind. But tar sands sinks and it gets into the sediment, and it's very difficult to get it out once it's in the water supply.
Now, I want to make clear that we're talking about related issues, but they're actually two separate issues, because here in Calumet, we're talking about the byproduct of this refining process, which is the petcoke. At the Enbridge spill in Kalamazoo, that was actually the tar sands oil going through the pipe. But it's all tied together, and of course, two of the people behind it are the Koch brothers, and I don't go on the air, and I, you know, a lot of the programs on this station are constantly hammering the Koch brothers and saying they're the evil incarnate. Okay, I don't usually do that, but in this case, you know, when everything's pointing in that direction, it's kind of hard to ignore it.
When I leave here today, Mike, I'm going to the Oak Park Public Library where they're doing a public showing of Koch Brothers Exposed. And I'll be on a panel over there to talk about how it affects the southeast side. There's just so many angles to this. And the three things that and what has brought Chris and Stephen and I together pretty much on this, and we're leaving out another element, and that's the actual mining of this. And if you want to see something really horrific,
yeah,
look at how this stuff and what it's doing to the environment up there in Canada.
And the boreal forests and the pollution that's caused in the,
right,
the land in Alberta, Canada. It is horrific.
Yeah.
That's
so
the only word you could use.
The residents, too, the residents around these refining facilities, visit Markstown, Indiana, and you will be devastated by what you smell in the air and the conditions that people are living in.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Marktown by the BP refinery.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
The BP is proposing to buy that, to level it, and take these people out of their homes. And it's on the National Registry of Historic Places. It's really shameful.
Really? I didn't know that.
One of these refineries puts a playground next to their refinery. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, it's like in Texas where they put the nursing home and the school next to the fertilizer factory that blew up. So we get that. Listen, we need to wrap it up, but I want to thank – I want to ask you guys real quickly, starting with you, Tom, what's next? What's the action that you need to take?
Well, it's got to be legislative here in Chicago, and it's got to come from the aldermen and our local legislators.
I know that you told me you've got some political figures. You've actually thanked some of them because they're looking into this right now.
Right. There is federal legislation. The two Michigan guests that you have on the line here know about Gary Peters proposing that, but that doesn't seem like it's going to go anywhere with our current Congress. And we have legislation in Michigan that we would like to be able to bring down here to Illinois and maybe strengthen the laws here. I'd like to see it gone from the shores of the Calumet, but that's kind of unlikely. So the next step would be containment of some type. And there is a model for that in Los Angeles where they have it in like...
But it's just good, the containment, the piles are just going to get larger and larger there.
Well, they definitely are. And we're worried about what's coming down next because, as you know, and you helped us out fighting the coal gasification plant there, and that may be next what they're thinking about doing is reviving that with using the tarp.
Oh, boy, let's just pile on the southeast side.
Right.
What are...
Question the EPA on the cleanup efforts of the Calumet because it's one of their cleanup projects right now.
That's true, yes. You did tell me about that, Stephen.
These are things that, you know, when you're writing in and you're protesting what's going on, you got to reveal, like, how is it that corporate polluters get a chance to pollute on lands that the taxpayer dollars are going to clean up in the future.
And I've got that link because Stephen gave that to me the other day, and you can click onto the remediation efforts by the U.S. EPA in the Grand Calumet River, and it makes me wonder if all this petcoke is going to blow into there. Why are we spending all this money? And it's a 1.8-mile stretch from Indianapolis Boulevard to Homan Avenue that they're trying to remove contaminants and restore habitat. Well, it sounds like it's just going to blow right back in. It's a really good point, Stephen. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today. If you want more information about their organizations, Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands or MyCats, you can find them on Facebook. You can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and find the link that also it's a Detroit Coalition Against Tar Sands is there. And gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today, and we'll continue to talk, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye. And Tom, of course, I want people to be able to go to, or I want them to go to the Southeast Environmental Task Force. And you have a blog, you're on Facebook. There are just different ways that people can get in. And most important, show up at these meetings that you're having. Have you got anything else planned for the near future?
We're going to be talking to our legislators, and we're talking to the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. I met with David St. Pierre yesterday and showed him just what was Stephen was talking about, where this stuff is being just running off and going into our sewer system, too. So that's another issue. We're talking with different departments and with the local aldermen in the 10th Ward of Chicago. So once they visit our Facebook page has been most active, so we ask them to go to that and to like us on Facebook, and why not become a member of the Southeast Department
Task Force?
You know what?
That's what I would say. So sign up. I mean, so as goes the southeast part of Chicago, so goes the rest of the city, because we can't just determine that this is the dumping ground. You know, my feeling is, hey, why not take the Petco piles? Let's put them on the north branch of the Chicago River. What do you think would happen if we did that?
Very unlikely.
It's very unlikely. Yeah, but the Calumet, hey, we got plenty of room down there. Right. I know, it's just sad. Tom, as always, thank you for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity.